Hi, everybody. So here I am again. These days, I don't show up as much as I would like to. So I'm very happy to be here, especially with someone I have been inviting for the podcast forever. So, my friend Patricia, we have met in several occasions. We do networking together, we do all sorts of things together. And I was always kept to the podcast, kept to the podcast. And now she finally succumbed to my. To my plead, and here she is. And there's Patricia, well, in Portuguese, Patricia Paes de Souza. Sounds very fancy, you guys. You know, you have no idea. It sounds very like royalty or rich families. We'll find out how rich she is. No, just kidding. And then we have Sarah Silva, also Portuguese name for some reason. Let's see if it's Portuguese or not. And we have Ana Navarro, right? This one is a little bit more. We can already anticipate where she is coming from. So just let's go with just a tiny bit about yourselves and pronunciating your name correctly and just figuring out where it comes from. So we'll start with my original special guest, Trícia Paes de Souza. Thank you very much for being here. I can't wait.
Oh, hello everyone. Well, thanks a lot, Rita, for the invitation. It's really nice to be here, particularly with Sara and Ana. I think it will be a very interesting conversation. So I am Patricia Paes de Souza. I am a freelance translator and editor based in Portugal. I work from English into Portuguese. I'm specializing in chemistry and life sciences. And I'm a full-time freelance translator since 2022, so 2.5 years ago. But this project started more or less about three years and a half ago. And
We'll find
maybe,
out a little bit more because I know about this, right? I basically was there.
It's
And
true.
Sarah, is this the Sarah Silva Portuguese or not so much Brazilian? Let's see.
I'm an imposter, I'm afraid. It's my husband's great grandfather who came from Madeira.
Oh, it is Portuguese in the end.
But he actually changed his name because he kind of absconded from the Navy and had to kind of go undercover. So it's all a big. So I kind of feel like I'm missing the de. I feel like there should be a de Silva, but
We have both possibilities. There's Silva and the Silva. So it's both are quite common. So yeah, don't worry.
No, but I'm based in the UK. My maiden name was Smith, so very English.
Oh, it's the equivalent to Silva in Portugal.
And my language pair is German into English, so I don't have, unfortunately, nothing to do with Portuguese at the moment, other than all these wonderful colleagues. So I've been a translator since 2008. Previously, I've worked in industry and did a little bit with chemistry, and that's why I specialize now in chemistry, chemical texts.
Very nice. And our Ana Navarro.
Navarro, yes, you pronounce it perfectly.
I love it. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm Spanish and I'm based in Stockholm. I've been living here for 8 years now, and I'm a medical translator. I have a background in digestive surgery. I worked for 4 years as a resident in general and digestive surgery. And I work from English and Swedish into Spanish. And I mostly work with documents related to pharma industry. I like more creative work, I would say. Translating blogs and about the healthcare and so on. And I also create content for a proctology clinic in Spain. And this week I'm starting a postgraduate course on medical communication and medical writing. So it's a new project I'm excited about.
So lots going on, but as you can see, what these ladies have in common and the reason why they are together in the podcast in this episode is because they are full-blown scientists, right? So Patricia and Sarah are from the chemistry realm, and Anna is a medical doctor. So let's dive a little bit into your previous lives. Because now you came to the dark side. Before that, you were in your labs, in your hospitals, in your research companies. So let's find out about that, because that's what I really like. I really like knowing how actually people got here from whatever they were, right? So going back to Patricia, going to school, you already knew you wanted to study science. You went to university, you studied science. Was it like this or not so much?
More or less. So to be honest, what I really wanted to study was psychology. But then as a 17-year-old, not so determined girl, maybe, I don't know, I was a bit influenced by some people that were saying, no, psychology, no, you should go and study psychiatry. Imagine
right. That, psychiatry, you know,
I will never be a medical doctor. That's impossible for me. So I started thinking, okay, I loved chemistry. So it was also another hypothesis, so something that I was also wondering. So I ended up studying chemical engineering. I graduated in chemical engineering, and then I started being interested in research, and I did a PhD in officially in chemistry, but the work was between in the border between chemistry and biochemistry. So I got very interested as well in life sciences. Biotechnology and biochemistry and so on. Then I work as a researcher for about, so in total with the PhD and everything, I maybe about 15 years. And then at a certain point, I made a now, which I can call a small change compared to what I've been doing in the
of
last
course.
four years. And I start working as what we call as a science manager. So it's someone that is still works directly with scientific research, but in a more administrative role, let's say. So I was giving support to researchers in the institutes I was working. And I did this until 2019, yes, I think. And then, I don't know, maybe the place where I was working, the conditions, myself, a lot of things. And I start
I'm done with
thinking,
this.
No, yes, that's it. I'm not happy with this. This is making me feel miserable. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's true. I really needed to change. I needed to leave. I wanted to leave the place where I was working. But then I thought, okay, let's search for new opportunities. But everything, and every time I was looking at a job post for something similar to what I was doing, I was thinking, no. I don't want to do this. I don't want to keep doing the same thing. I want to do something different. But of course, the big issue, the big question, the $1 million question is, what am I going to do? I'm almost 50, so it's not easy to change. It will be impossible, but I don't know. I was start thinking and thinking and thinking. And then suddenly, talking with one of my sister-in-laws, which is a psychologist, she proposed, why don't you try to make a list with three columns. This is real. In the first column, take note of what you like doing, even if it's really a very small task. It doesn't matter. Sometimes small tasks can become a profession. Maybe there is some relation and you are not seeing it yet. In the second column, identify things that you think you are good doing. So what I like to do, what I think I'm doing.
A bit of an ikigai kind of test, right?
Yes, and the third one is, what do you think that people recognize that you are good at? Of course, in the beginning, I said, no, I'm not, to myself. I said, okay, to her, and then I said, no, I'm not going to do this. It's a little bit childish. But then I thought, but why not? I need to do something. I want to live where I am, what I'm doing, so I need to do something. And I start doing it. And suddenly, I start realizing that one of the things that I really enjoy doing was writing and reviewing, because part of my job was to help researchers preparing funding applications or applications to get the funds for their research. And I really enjoy helping them preparing, getting their drafts and making corrections, suggestions, and so on. And one day I commented this with a friend, and from, I don't know why, she said, oh, I have a friend, and she makes some, I don't know, translations and revisions of the patents. I'm going to put you in contact with her. And I said, okay. And that was it. So I started talking with her. She said, oh, I'm looking for a reviewer right now. Would you like to try and see if we can work together well and so on? And I said, okay, let's try it. And so that's it. And so suddenly, almost from one day to the other, becoming a translator slash
You saw the
editor or
light.
reviewer, it's like I had never thought about it. So it was really amazing or impressive for me. And then, of course, I had to spot how
And then
I'm going to
I'll
change. And
wait right there because we'll come back to it. But I
so.
kind of know this story and I love it. But so we want to go step by step because it's so exciting, right? And I'm wondering if for Sarah, things were a little bit like this, nothing like this. So what happened? As a child, were you inclined towards languages? You already knew you wanted to go more into the science realm. What was the story?
I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'd never been abroad as a child. And it was only when I got to school and we started doing languages, I was just like, oh, this whole new world. And like signed up for everything I could, go on like a German exchange and trips wherever. And then I was like, right, I love languages, all very good. Maybe I'd be a translator. And then I kind of got distracted a little bit with the science. I was like, oh, chemistry is really fun. Maybe I'll do that. And then my A-levels, before university, were kind of half languages like French and German and half chemistry and maths. And I was just like, I don't know which way to go. So my degree then was chemistry and German. I found a way to combine the two. Not very
That
many.
sounds like something in the States or something, where I have a friend who's an economist and then she studied carpentry at the same time. So remind me of her.
So I spent 3 years in the UK doing that, and then a year in Germany as well, doing some chemistry courses and to combine with the year abroad. And at the end, I still didn't know what I really wanted to do. So I knew that I didn't really want to go into teaching, which everyone was saying, oh, you're clearly going to go into teaching. Like, no.
But what would you teach? The
science
part or the language?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this before.
So I then basically spent the next few years going for doing different jobs, like in science. I worked in a paper mill, I worked in a flooring company doing more kind of speaking with customers and export. And then I moved to a pharmaceutical company and I thought, I've cracked it now. I've got like, there's an international company, there's science, I can move around. And it just wasn't quite gelling for me. So either kind of doing the practical science bits in the lab or on the shop floor and not being able to do languages, and then doing more languages in a manufacturing company, but not really getting to grips with the science. And I just couldn't find a way to combine the two. And then I remembered, like years and years back, oh, I really wanted to be a translator. Like, what would that involve?
Would I be happy there?
So I kind of built up my business really over a year. I thought, I'll give myself a year to prepare while I'm working at this pharmaceutical company, and kind of worked away at doing different courses and investigating what it would take, and then set up my business kind of on the side and moved straight into freelance translation where I could combine the two.
Oh, that's so romantic. I love it. For now, right? That was then, not now. Anna, it's nothing like this, right?
No, not at all. It's like completely different story also, but it's cool to see like different approaches to the same goal.
So what happened? You always dreamt of being a doctor?
No. Not at all. I mean, I was also as a kid, like, I'm not sure what I like. I was good, like a good student, so I had
you had
grades
options.
And I like science. I also like to write. I remember as a kid writing a lot and creating a lot of stories and so, but never too serious, I would say. And as I got into high school, I realized I wanted to know how the human body works, and I really was interested on the human body itself, like how does it work? So I thought, okay, that's what you know as when you became a doctor. And I really liked studying medicine. I really enjoyed the idea of becoming a surgeon. I like actually seeing the body from outside and seeing what's
the
going
inside.
On in there. That was the thing. But I realized that after 4 years, that was not enough. And that was not the life I wanted to like to have in the future if I wanted a family and so. And it was tough, of course. It was like a hard decision. But I think it was the right one. And well, long story short, I moved with my husband to Sweden and we had kids. So in between, I had to think, okay, I'm in a different country, new language, a baby. It's like, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. And since I had the English, I had the medical knowledge, and I didn't want to just give it up. Like, I wanted to still keep related to that, like being close to that. So, okay, I can learn Swedish, I can learn translation and get a bit deep into that. So I took some courses about translation, general translation, and specific for the medical field. And when my life was more or less established, like my family life, I had two kids, and then I decided it was time to start my, as a freelancer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, it's a different path, but here we are,
yeah,
all of us.
In the same moment together.
Yes.
So Patricia, going back to this seeing the light, deciding, and then Patricia, she was very good in going through this path because she was very proper in choosing to do what you're supposed to do in a situation like this, from my opinion, of course, from my point of view. So Patricia decided to just dive deep and go back to school, to real school, to university, right? So you went to Universidad Autónoma, and that's how the journey really began, right?
Yes, maybe I think there was an initial first step, which is which was really important, which was my mentoring program.
Because I did it before. I didn't know that. I thought it was everything was after.
Because when I start, so when I saw the light, it was about March or April 2021. And then I said, okay, what am I going to do? And I start searching for information and searching and searching. And I find out two things, APTRAD, so the Portuguese Association for Translators and Interpreters. And I found, a master here in Lisbon, okay, in the area of Lisbon, a master in translation. But I said, okay, master, it will take me 2 years, I don't know. And I found the postgraduate course in Universidad Autónoma in translation. But I said, okay, I have no information. Is it worth it? How is it? And so on. But then because I found APTRAD, and APTRAD has several mentoring programs for different profiles. And so I said, oh, maybe this is a good idea to have a training, or not a training, but okay, to have a few sessions. The program, it was 8 sessions, once per week, I think, with someone that is a professional in the area. It works for several years already. And so that's what I did. And during the mentoring program, I had the opportunity to discuss this idea of making the postgraduate course. And it was good because the Ana Sofia Correa, with whom I did the mentoring, she knew the course, and she said, "Oh, it is very practical. Maybe it's really what you need at this stage," because at that moment, I have never even heard about the CAT tool. So when she told me about the CAT tool, I said, okay, what's a CAT tool? She said, no. So maybe it will be very useful for you for sure to do the postgraduate course. And it was true. So I started in November 2021, and it was two semester course. And it was really, really worth doing it. In the middle, I left the place where I was. I thought, okay, I'm going to finish the course, and then I leave the place where I'm working and start working as a freelancer. But in February, I thought, no, I can't wait anymore. I need to, because if I was not dedicated full time to search for opportunities, to contact companies and so on, to become more active on LinkedIn, etc., it would be impossible. So at a certain point, I had to make this decision, and so I quit my job, a hard decision, as you can imagine, but the best decision I had. and so I think that was it for the first step, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So after you started your postgrad, did you already start looking for clients, since you had already been mentored by Ana Sofia Correa? She's been on the podcast, of course. She's with me in Women in Localization. Beijing's in a sphere. And so you already knew from relevant people in the industry with a lot of experience kind of how things worked, right? By this time, I suppose you already had some sort of an idea of how things worked. So what did you do? Did you start contacting possible clients while you were still studying? Did you wait until you have everything finished so that you
No, no,
could?
no.
No, you didn't wait.
No, I started doing it very slowly because I was working during the day. I had the postgrad in the evenings, let's say twice per week. So, okay, whenever I had a free time, I start searching for companies. I start making a list, contacting them, either sending an email with my CV or filling out the forms online because several have this kind of registration model, let's say. I start step by step, so slowly being more active on LinkedIn. So one of the things that we did during the mentoring program was to prepare my profile on LinkedIn. I had already registered, but I was never on LinkedIn before, so I had to make a huge change in my profile. And the idea, okay, start being more active there, looking for companies, looking for possible for colleagues, and see how they were moving on LinkedIn and so on. So slowly, step by step, I start doing that. And then when I quit, of course, I could dedicate full time to that kind of search and activities.
So, Sarah, what happened after that year of prepping? What happened? Did you, and then you quit your job, I suppose, right? After the year of prepping, you quit your job. And then first steps.
Yeah,
Well, the
so
prepping was the first step, obviously, but
I also, because I once knew that it was going to take a while to build up, and I didn't want to lose, I had a mortgage. I was living with my partner at the time, and I couldn't just lose the salary. So I thought I need to be clever about this. And when I handed in my resignation, I actually pitched my manager and said, "How about I
That's what I
stay
thought.
a couple of, stay a couple of extra months and train the new people while I build up as a freelancer?" And he
Did
went
you
with
not
that.
propose that you would work for them? Because I'm sure that they're probably an international company, that they had materials that wasn't in the cards.
No, because I translate into English and it was an American-owned company. So, yeah,
Right. In
there
that
wasn't
case.
much opportunity there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then it was easier, as Patricia said, like when you commit yourself full time. So after the couple of months that I worked part time, then I felt like actually I need to concentrate on this all the time instead of just part time because I know there's a sense of urgency then, isn't there? You have to do it. And I had plan B and plan C and everything. And I think I did get lucky at the beginning with some of the agencies that I contacted. They kind of pinpointed chemistry, science, we need somebody with your specialism. And one particular agency said to me that their chemistry specialist had just retired. So it was just at the right time that I was just, hello, I can help. And she knew that I was just starting and she was prepared to kind of train me in the way that she wanted me to work for her with the projects that they had coming up. So that was really a really good piece of luck. And I also started a master's degree, kind of part-time, a distance learning one to get the qualification because I had the German degree and the chemistry, but I still wanted the translation training.
Wow, that is really good because you had someone to help you right there and to like value your work on the one hand, and on the other hand, to actually enhance it, right? Because apparently, this person had a lot of experience with the previous person in chemistry. So that's amazing. That's something probably I never heard of before either. See, it's all new to me. So, Anna, what happened after baby number two and you went back to work? So you slot, what happened when you were actually creating your CV, let's say, to present to agencies, I suppose? How was that strange feeling of presenting yourself not as a doctor? And doctors, it's very funny to me that when they present themselves to people, they say, "I am doctor, blah, blah, blah," which is like insane. All of us could do that, but nobody does it. It's just doctors and lawyers, I guess, do that, which is very strange. So what happened? Did you have like an identity crisis or what happened there?
That could be the perfect explanation of what I had. I mean, it was It's been like I am not that organized as Patricia and Sara as I'm seeing right now. I meet up.
Don't say that because you used to operate on open people.
I mean, organized in the sense of life, organized, but I'm very good at job. But I think I started really like little by little since the kids were still young and we are here alone without any help. And you know, after COVID, the kids were sick all the time. And so it was very like slow thing at the beginning. But I have to admit that there was a point, like a decisive point was I also joined Anna Sophia in one of her mentorships. And that was like completely changed everything. I mean, I learned so much and it was like it changed. I was a bit lost, I would say, and with her it was like, okay, now I know what I have to do. I will do it better or worse, but I know like a path to follow. That was one thing I was missing, like a bit going on the wild by myself. So I think that it was like the best thing I've done for many, like since the whole journey started. So yeah, mostly LinkedIn and sending CVs and updating the CV like in a proper way and like focusing more on the marketing or the like business side because I was too focused or too scared on the translation part. I have been doing courses and I was like not feeling like I need to know more about that, but I was like neglecting the other side. So once I started focusing on that, everything improved and also like training and so. So I felt much more comfortable. So Anna Sophia again helped us.
Wow. So maybe Sara has something to say about Anna Sophia too. Who knows?
I've met Anna Sophia a couple of times, and yeah, she's very knowledgeable and very clear. Yeah, amazing.
So she was not your mentor, at least until now. You never know what's going to happen. Yeah,
No.
it's true. I have an episode with her, obviously, and I already told her I was going to invite her to come back again because I know that she's. She seems to be very relevant in the community, especially when it comes to life sciences. So at least she's a reference for me. So that's the way I see it too. And I understand because I talked to her on many occasions and she's very organized, guys.
Yes. So it's good to
Seriously.
have her as a reference.
Yes, she's very,
Or
I'm
not,
like,
because
oh.
she does so many things that at a certain point you think, oh, I'm doing so little compared to her, but no.
Yes, she does everything very well. So I would say that it's okay to have her as a mentor and a model because she really is
That
someone to follow,
is
really.
true.
That's true. So we all agree. Great. So, Patricia, what was the impact of receiving those first few jobs? First, did they go, see? She's going to be like, what happened here? So when you received those first couple of projects, what happened? Were they, I know that you had been collaborating with people who are already in the industry, but when you received your own brand new, just for you projects, was it from an agency, from a direct client? How did that happen and how did it feel and what did you do?
Yes. So the first feeling is to get very scared, like, oh my God, am I going to be able to do to deal with this, to deliver a good quality job and so on. So, but of course, it's really exciting and it's a slow process. I think this is something that but I was prepared for this because fortunately, Anna had already alerted me for this. And you know that I don't know one of in the beginning I once see something on LinkedIn, which was a post where they had like an advertisement, let's say, I don't know. So the three frequent mistakes a translator does in the beginning of the career, something like that. So one was not to specialize. The second one, I don't remember now, but maybe I'll tell you later. And the most important for me it was they think this will be fast. They think that in a few months they will be getting a lot of jobs and working. And so on. No, it can, and it was really written there. It can take 2 or 3 years. And I said, okay, maybe if I don't forget this and I keep, because it's true, you get the first job, it's
amazing, but you will never know when is the next job coming. And it's true, it takes some time. There are some months where I didn't receive any job, then slowly, and it's true, it has been increasing. And I really noticed the difference. I'm getting more and more jobs. I work with the agencies at the moment. I have two direct clients, which is also very interesting.
Very interesting.
And it was one of them, for example, it was for coincidence. It was a former colleague from university. And she knew someone that was looking for someone to translate into Portuguese. She they had followed my change on LinkedIn. She's living in Australia, so we never see each other. But she sent me a message on LinkedIn saying, "Oh, Patrice, I saw your change. It's really amazing. I hope everything is going well, blah, blah, blah." And she told me, "Well, I know someone that is looking for a translator into Portuguese, from English into Portuguese. Would you be interesting?" I said, "Yes, of course." And so, and he has sent me some jobs. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's, we need really to be patient. But of course, we need to, at the same time, we need to be proactive. We need the opportunities which don't come this way, where someone sends you a message, or it can happen, but.
If good ones do, search, huh?
Yeah, it's true. But so
tell me
I
about
try
it.
To be as more active as possible. I'm also registered on Pros. I don't know I say Prosy, or
some people say pros.com, other people say Prosy, yeah. Other people say Pros, whatever okay. You want. We all know
whatever
what it is.
So Pros. And so I try to be there as much as possible and try to see the job posts that fit into my profile. I always reply whenever it's suitable for me. I've been contacted a few times and I got some jobs through that job posts. And LinkedIn, of course, as I told you.
So when you received that first job, it was already one of those regular agency projects in a CAD tool, with their own CAD tool, or was it for you to have your own CAD tool? What was it all about? It wasn't that long ago, so you have to remember.
Nobody is. I don't remember because I have so many new things in my head, you know. I've learned so much in the
you
last
need to go further
years.
In order to go back and remember the
yes,
first
it's
steps.
True. I don't know. It's maybe, okay, in the beginning maybe it was small jobs. I think it's normal when they don't know the person, they just send you small jobs, some small translation or revision jobs. Then after some time, if that goes well, they send you bigger jobs. I don't know. So usually I now I have both Trados and MemoQ. I work with both. I'm receiving jobs where I have to use both of them. And sometimes I work on their platforms as well. So it depends, but I don't know what happened first, to be honest.
Ay.
Sorry.
What about Sarah? Do you have Sarah, do you have a better memory? So do you remember how it was that process of getting the first client? Was it by a personal reference? Was it because you sent out the CV? What happened for you?
I think the first lot of clients, I was very proactive about contacting agencies, and that's all I kind of had in my mind. I hadn't even kind of considered direct clients at the beginning. I was like, I'm going to contact agencies, and I didn't feel, because I didn't have the translation qualification and everything in the bag at that time, that I could go after kind of direct clients, which is crazy now if I look back, but but I wanted to get the experience.
But it totally makes sense that you start that way for many reasons.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's fine.
So I just contacted lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of agencies, though, until I was getting kind of regular work. And I think having that specialism as well of science, chemistry, that I'd worked for a pharmaceutical company, there was a lot of projects that came up that they could go, this is a match for you. And I guess I felt quite lucky now. When people say it takes years to get established, and I think in 6 months I'd replaced my income from my previous job, so I was kind of happy ticking along. And then I did everything in the first few years. I had my first child, and then another one, and then we moved house, and the different things going on. And then my time was getting more and more restricted, and then I started getting more serious about marketing, because
right,
I wanted the direct clients, the higher rates, the work, the longer deadlines. Then, you know, the agencies were wanting kind of projects turned around very quickly. But I did invest in Trados, or is it SDL, RWS now?
Exactly.
But right at the beginning, because I saw that a lot of agencies were requesting like that for my language pair. And I still use that today. So that was, I suppose, one of my first investments and one thing that I kind of used as if I'm going to be applying for these jobs and these agencies, this is what they need. So that's what I need to get ready to be prepared and learn how to use it quickly.
It makes sense, obviously. Yes. I guess less and less, but because of the portals, right? But it totally makes sense if you've started at least 4 or 5 years ago or a couple of years ago. And what about our Anna?
I agree with Sarah in that concept.
Was that getting the first client thing situated and receiving the first job, of that stuff?
I also got Trados one of the first things, like, okay, I see everyone is asking for it, and it's like, okay, let's see.
It has to be the standard, right?
Yeah, I mean, I started at the same time I started sending my CV, I started collaborating with pros pro bono and doing some translations pro bono. So it helped me getting some confidence also. And yeah, but I think my first client I got him from LinkedIn. So I was happy. Like, okay, I got contacted. Like, they contacted me instead of me going. So it's like, okay, I'm doing something right on LinkedIn. But since I had already Trados, I can say I gave like this confidence aura, like, yeah, I can do that. I know Trados. And so it goes like, I mean, as every first job, exciting and scary at the same time. But I would say that I have found I work with agencies, but I've gotten contact via LinkedIn more than email, like sending CVs or so. So, yeah, it was like, nice experience. Like, wow, I have changed my patience for like this new job and it's working. So.
Yes, the work is working. So that's great. So Patricia, what's the story these days? So what happens these days? What is your typical day or week or month in terms of clients? Is it international clients, national clients, agencies, direct clients? Where does your work come from and from whom and where?
So it's main at the moment, mainly it's agencies. I have these two direct clients, but they just send me jobs with sometimes, it's not something with a regular basis. It depends on their needs.
Of course.
So I'm collaborating with, let's say, I don't know, maybe 8-10 agencies who send me, of course, but there is one agency that can send me one work today and another one 6 months.
We know,
after,
we know.
So it's, but okay, maybe there
or
are.
Or a couple of years might go by or more.
So it's difficult to say how my day or my week is going to be, because you never know if you are going to get many jobs, few jobs, no jobs. So whenever whenever I'm not working on a project, I try to prepare posts for LinkedIn, be on LinkedIn, searching for agencies, trying to get to be in touch to how do you say, to interact with the possible clients, with colleagues. It's very, I think it's very useful as well to network, to know new people, you can get chances of collaborating or even for colleagues to reference you. So I think it's very useful. Also something that I try to do in being in Lisbon, maybe it's more or less easy. It's to participate in events in the industry, but industry, I'm saying life sciences or and chemistry, not language industry, you see. So because it's really useful if you go and you listen to people, how they talk, the terms they use, the needs they have. Maybe there will be the opportunity to collaborate with someone. So whenever possible, particularly when the events are free, and there are a lot of free events, you don't need to. I don't think you need to be paying all the time. It's not true. So I don't know, I'm always busy. Sometimes I feel like I want to do something for me or something that I need to for the family, or I need, no, I need to put it in my schedule because otherwise I never get the time to do it. So
And you have that weekly post about the elements, right? I guess
yes.
everybody loves it. I do.
Yes, I don't know. I don't have so many reactions, I would say, but maybe people just know it and like it. I don't know. I don't think the idea is to you don't make posts to measure how many likes you have. So it's
of course.
And it was interesting because when I start posting, one of I don't know why, I don't know why, but once I made a post about fun things about the periodic table, and people were reacting a lot and saying, "Ah, oh, this is so nice." And then I don't know, I thought maybe maybe I should focus on the periodic table. And so suddenly I said, I knew someone that had a weekly post on acronyms. And then when I got these things together, okay, periodic table, weekly posts, I have 118 elements, so I have 118 weeks to post. And
it's
that's
2 years
started.
or more.
Yes.
More than 2 years.
And so I'm on number 50 or something, or
49, so there's
something
still
like
a
that.
long way to go.
Yeah. But it has been, for me, it has been really funny and interesting to do it. I love it. I have to really control myself to make small posts, you know, because I want to tell everything about the element. And it's impossible because people don't have the patience to read big posts. So I get a lot of information and then I cut and cut and cut and get, okay.
Oh, so there's a lot
A
of
post is.
editing going on
Yes.
after all the creative fruition. So what about Sarah? What is it these days? Is it like it used to be? Now you have direct clients and all of that because you figured out that, you know, there's more to life than agencies, right? I guess everybody gets to that conclusion at different stages of the process. But, you know, it's not, sometimes it's probably the hardest thing to get if you don't have any help from your friends, right? Most of the people that I know work for direct clients because of something like Patricia mentioned, that is like you get to know people in the industry, you have been in the industry, and therefore they know you and they go somewhere, they think your profile fits, and that's how it happens. Not necessarily, obviously. I also know that in life sciences, things are a little bit more dynamic. I mean, I used to work for TransPerfect, so I know how quick, fast, and needed that is, right? That kind of content. So, what is it like today, your clients, your landscape of work?
So I've switched really. I've worked more with direct clients, probably 80, 85% direct clients, and then fewer agencies. And that's really come about because I got really intentional with marketing when I realized that a lot of people didn't realize, like a lot of companies will automatically go to a translation agency because they think everything is resolved. They don't necessarily know that there are translators that specialize in their particular industry. So I was like, right, this is on me now. I have to go and market myself. And then I've got all obsessed with marketing, and now I've run a group for translators, teaching them marketing tactics and strategies, and taking them on marketing adventures. But so I started going to events, like Patricia was saying, going to client events and meeting people there, running marketing campaigns, kind of popping up where they are really, and contacting direct clients in the same kind of persistent manner that I did at the originally with agencies, and then kind of build the relationships over time. And it does, for me, tends to take time because I think when you're trying something new and they're like working as a freelancer rather than an established business, the trust, you have to build up the trust and build up the relationship. So, but I think the more cautious clients I love, because I know that when we start working together, they're going to stay. They're going to be very loyal, and we're going to work together for quite a while. And that's kind of what I've built up really, I suppose, the relationships and introducing myself at different formats, being recommended by other translators, by other clients, by other companies, and then keeping in touch with those people. So yeah, and I suppose now I specialize even more than just in chemistry, and I focus on the paints and coatings industry, the food chemistry and kind of beverage and analytical institutes and research institutes. So,
Wow, I love that. Actually, I was going to ask that. I mean, what happened? Chemistry or medicine or whatever it is, and then how you branched out. But our Sarah has already given me the answer. So, Anna, what's the landscape of clients that you have at the moment?
at this point, I'm working mainly, I think, all of them with agencies. I'm in a earlier phase of my career still, so it's like I'm still
We will
learning.
learn from Sarah, right?
Totally. I mean, it's amazing everything she says. It's like on the point. So I'm still more like building like everything around me. So I think that working with agencies at this point is the most like easy thing for me. And I have been very lucky. I have been having regular jobs from them, even if it's different, it's like kind of regular thing. And I have found some PMs that are like amazing, and I'm really happy in that sense. Like, okay, it feels like not that tight deadlines. Everything horrible you hear about agencies, I'm not experiencing it yet. So I'm happy in that sense. Yes, mostly like my days, as Patricia said, some weeks you have more, some weeks you have less, trying to build the LinkedIn stuff or working on the creating content for this clinic I told you. So it's a bit. Yeah, it's some weeks are crazy, some weeks are just like, okay, now I can catch up with all the things I have forgotten.
Okay. Yeah, that's true that we always talk about direct clients, but in my experience, it's been a minute. The truth is that not all companies are ready for freelancers. Not all freelancers are ready for companies, right? So it's true that most of the people, if they have a larger corporation, they tend to go for agencies, but they're actually in a better position to hire freelancers because it's much easier for a large institution to create some sort of team that would be internally responsible for anything that has to do with language. And freelancers in that situation can be very valuable because people can help each other. That's the situation I have with a couple of my clients where everybody's been in the industry for a long time. The client has nothing to do with translation, it's not an agency. They have internal people who have been in the industry for a long time and know how to handle things from all perspectives, the documents, the formats, the CAD tools. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration when working with a direct client, which is why I think that most companies don't even think about just taking on the responsibility of putting together a team because it does entail certain types of internal preparation. It's true, right? So sometimes they need someone who will just handle everything. But I've seen that the trend is actually shifting the last probably 5 years. I have seen a lot of my friends who used to be project managers with me. Thank you for saying good things about project managers. Just the hardest job in the whole language industry. It is. Trust me. And it's true that a lot of the friends that I've had over time have been shifting into companies that are not translation agencies and have been helping these companies actually get in closer contact with freelancers. So that's really an ideal situation that you can have an internal team that can help you with documentation in general and also know how to handle formats, CAD tools, and everything that needs to be handled to work with freelancers. So I guess this is what we have to consider. Sometimes they're not ready for us, sometimes we're not ready for them, right? So, Patricia, besides the chemistry stuff, the more medical stuff, do you also venture, since you like writing and creative stuff, do you also venture into other domains? Or do you like, oh, it's not scientific, I don't want to do any of
No,
this?
no, no. Sometimes, yes. In the beginning, I was really afraid when with marketing content, for example. I was, because I had, okay, I'm not creative. I don't know how to deal with that. I won't be good at it. But slowly, sometimes I get small jobs. I collaborate with an agency and they have this kind of needs for apps and websites and so on. And I start working. So slowly I start thinking, oh, this is, and then I got interested on it. It's because it's challenging, you know, like finding the right word or the right sentence, because I think it's different than when it's more very scientific and technical. You don't need, of course, you need, it's, you need, it's in, it needs to be well written in Portuguese and so on, but it's not creative in the sense that it's very pragmatic. I don't know, very, very straight to the point. I don't know. And with those kind of contents, you are challenged. It's different. It's mm-hmm. interesting. So for example, few weeks ago, I was contacted to make a revision of a legal document, which was, in Portuguese, it's acordo antenupcial. I think in English, it's something like a prenup agreement or something like that.
Just a prenup, oh, in American English.
Okay, prenup. But I said, okay, maybe I can try and see how it goes. And it was, and then I received when I sent the job,
feedback.
It was the feedback, it was just, thank you so much for your excellent work. Your comments were really useful, blah, 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 blah. And I was saying, oh, okay, so maybe I shouldn't be so, scared. You know, when you think it's so scared and overthinking about, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm like, no, of course, it's not what I really enjoy doing.
Your main activity. Main,
and not preferred at all, but no, but it was, it's not illegal in the sense of a very hard document. So it's, but I think we need to be open to try different things and of course be responsible and do it as if you see that it's something that you won't be good or it will take you too long or whatever, or if you suspect that you are not going to deliver a good job, I think you really need to say no, thank you, I'm not going to do this.
Yes, but at the art of saying no.
Yes, it's true.
And also venture and do certain things
with ourselves and with the clients and so on. So. But at the same time, I think it's good to take the small challenges, and slowly you will start learning. Maybe doing on the first time it's not a perfect job. There are no perfect jobs, but okay. But not so close to perfection. But next time it will be better, and I think you need to. But of course, it will take you more time the first time. The second time you will do it more easily. So.
Yes, it's a really interesting job because all sorts of things can happen, right?
It's one of the things that I'm always learning. It's and I love searching for sometimes I have to control myself because I can take a lot of time looking for one term. And it's terrible because at the same time I say, no, I need to stop. It's this one, I don't need to have, but I really like to search and to learn. So it's
a funny job because sometimes we find ourselves so interested in the content that we forget that we're actually translating it. And we're like, oh, reading the whole thing. Like, oh, yeah, right.
I think that's also when you've been trained as a scientist, like Anna and Patricia especially, when you've been trained to like come up with your hypothesis and then research it and do the experimental and then evaluate your results and everything else. And so you're in that kind of curiosity experimental mindset.
Yeah, you have to do it for language work all the time.
So I need to be sure that it's that term. I need to have a proof. I need to, okay, where is this? Where was it published? And then I said, no, that's enough. It doesn't matter. The client doesn't want to know where this was published. It's this term, that's it.
So Sarah, who would be, not a brand specifically or a name, but the features of your ideal client? So if you could manifest this one client, describe the features. Now I've used this question 3 or 4 times and I'm really enjoying it. Maybe I'll make it my own and I'll have it every time.
That's a really challenging question.
I know.
Yes. I think the clients that I love working with are really invested in getting a good result. I think that's the key thing. And I want to be part of like their process and understand what, you know, how this translation or this editing project fits in with the bigger picture. I really kind of like that, where I've helped academic researchers get their work published and then they come back and say, oh, we've got it published in this journal and that we've been nominated for an award and seen everything kind of go, like a timeline that goes and you can kind of see that you played a little part in that. But I think the types of projects make a big difference in how much I enjoy my work. And this one particular client as well, he's they cultivate yeasts in this research institute to make beer and to develop like the flavors of the different beers and the brewing process. And he's actually goes out on a yeast hunt and they find like a really old ancient oak barrel or something, and they found an old culture of yeast, and they take that and propagate it and kind of cultivate it to make a new flavor that hasn't been around for centuries. And that kind of practical application of the science, I really like to hear the story and the how it impacts people. And even the same with the coatings and paints and coatings, I can see how it's used in the end product and how it stops bacteria spreading or anti-corrosion, or there's a story with it. I like to have the whole picture rather than something really abstract, and to be kind of fully invested in the process, but not have to do the science myself. Just be kind of helping them get the international recognition and be part of it.
Yeah, it's true. It's we're always learning, always learning, always learning. And sometimes we're the first people to see everything, and it's like, wow, they have done it. We have looked at it first, right? I saw it first. So yeah, it's very interesting. Then when you see the brands everywhere, you see somewhat your work, not necessarily your work, but your clients' work. I guess it's even more interesting than, sometimes we don't have the chance to actually pinpoint this part was me or whatever, but it's like seeing the brand. Just the other day when I went to Women in Localization, I was walking, which is pretty rare, and then I was like, oh my God, I had just finished a project today before for a client, and I saw the brand in front of me because that was a building where the sign was, and I was like, wow, this is insane, right? So it's like you create these personal relationships with these people because you really are paying extra, extra, extra attention to everything that they do, right? And you need to know how they write, how they communicate to their clients, how they're going to use this information in the real world. And then when you see it, it's like, wow. And I guess not many people have the opportunity to look at this, right? So I guess we're very lucky. So what about Anna, your favorite client, your ideal client, someone who does stomach surgery and publishes articles?
Well, at this point, like my ideal client in the sense of content, I really like I would like to be translating more books and content for students and medical students or like for professionals. At this point, I haven't done that yet, but that's something I would like to. Thanks to this pro bono thing, I got to translate a book, and that was an amazing experience. I really loved it. And then having like the actual book, and as you mentioned, like seeing your job, your work like put on your hands, it's an amazing thing. And thinking on the client more on the like personal aspect,
Yeah, the
like
features of the client.
I really think it's important the communication. If you have a good communication with someone you can talk to and you are open and they are open and sincere with you, like what they really need or what they really want, and you can access, they are accessible. For me, that's really important more than other features. It's like you feel that you have a good, like you can communicate well. For me, it's important. Maybe it's not for other people, but I really like feeling understood, and I understand what they say, and we have like they are reachable, I would say.
Yeah, that's true. To create a good relationship with the client, the PM, whomever that person might be, the localization manager, but it's really the key. If it's harder, you're more open about the situation. If it's easier, it's a lot of pleasure. I say all sorts of things to people like, oh my God, thank you so much. I loved your comments, things like that, right? Because it's true. And I just think that it's insane when everybody is in sync and just really to trying to do the best that they can by sharing what they're thinking, right? And then it goes back and forth. I like that a lot. And I think that's one of the things that's missing in the industry is that people have more contact with each other. I remember when I don't know, 15 years ago or so, I had a few projects where every single person could see everybody else's work. And now I have a client where we can also do that. And I think it's just unbelievable because even if you don't necessarily talk to the people who are doing the same thing as you are. Just the fact that you see all the queries live, right? It's not like they send you a query sheet or anything. You just see everything live. And those problems that they face are usually the same problems that you face. So like a client that allows multiple people involved in a project to communicate, yeah, it's a huge plus, right? And we don't even know how it's not done like this more often, right?
As a freelance, you can feel like you are just a number in their database, like you are another one, like another, like, so if you have a good communication, you feel, okay, that's, I'm a person behind the, like the computer. It's not just a single number that they access and they send you work and bye-bye. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
That's true. But from my experience, the vast majority of project managers, speaking about agencies now, they really know the people that they work with. That was my experience, even working at TransPerfect, for example, right? I really knew those people well, and they knew me, and we were in really close contact, which is something that people sometimes think it's not possible with big agencies. But I mean, it depends on what kind of relationship you actually create with that agency and those project managers, right? Because it just happens everywhere. It just happens under certain circumstances, right? And we have to go for that more and more, even if the emails are automated and we hate it, even if we have to click faster. There are ways of working around all of these things. They're just not available to every relationship that you create, right? And you have to be open to that, that with some clients, you're going to have that relationship that is ideal, where you can just share ideas, talk about things, discuss problems. With others, you are a little bit more of a number, right? But we have to understand who we are working with and also the reasons behind this. That's why I always think that freelancers should know a lot more about what goes on behind closed doors of LSPs, right? Because that would be more of an understanding. And also the clients, if it's direct clients, their infrastructure, right? Where does my work come from within this company? Who is looking after me here, right? So it's very important. I deeply believe that we need to get to know each other more, like Patricia and I like our networkings and all of that. And Anna apparently also has been in the networking sessions. So Sarah, you're welcome to come anytime you want. Everything is advertised on LinkedIn. Obviously, everybody knows that's the main platform for us here. I use it for the podcast all the time, right? That's where I advertise the podcast, where I talk about the podcast, where I post about the podcast. But it's true that we also need to have this more of an exchange with the people who are on the other side, and they need to get to know us and we need to get to know them. So that's what I'm hoping to see in the near future. And I'll leave you with that because it's been amazing. I know you have things to do, and I'm very, very happy that this finally happened. And I say, finally, this is for Patricia.
I know. And
because you ladies are innocent, right?
Yes, it's true.
For you, this is. So thank you so much. This was amazing. And don't be disappointed I didn't ask you about AI. It's just because I feel like that is the subject that everybody talks about. There is too much information about it. So usually I don't bring that up unless there's a reason why I should do it. Just want to leave it out there because people go like, oh. Sometimes people ask me, you didn't ask this question or you didn't ask that question to these people. And so it doesn't go like that. Mm-hmm. Except for now, the one that I'm thinking about adopting with your favorite client, beware, next guests. But other than that, as we know, as I always say, this is not prepared and we just go along with the conversation. AI didn't come up. I'm just bringing it up now to say that, look, it didn't come up.
Thank you so much for inviting us. Yeah, as well for inviting us to join you.
Yay! It was a great pleasure. I knew I was going to learn a lot from you. And I think it's really important for people to see also that you have started somewhere else other than directly in the industry. And there's a lot of people like that, right? I guess in the youngest, super youngest generation where you already have translation degrees everywhere and it's really widespread. But the vast majority of people, or a lot of the people, have studied other things and then have made their way through all the means that they could in order to join us in the, today I'm going to call it, bright side.
Thank you so much, Rita.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'll see you around. I'll follow you guys because you always have amazing things to say. And we'll follow Patricia for her elements. Very happy in the lab.
It's on Wednesday.
So, looking forward to seeing your posts, your appearances, everything that you do. We love hearing from all of you people who used to be in science and are now in science, but from another perspective. So thank you very much, and I'll see you very soon.
Thank you.